Hello and a very warm welcome to Central Stage. It's good to have you with us. Now, according to the UN, Syria unrest, now entering its third year, has been a catastrophe for civilians. And children have suffered in the most heartbreaking way. As a matter of fact, there is a children's crisis in Syria. Welcome back. Now, today we'll be getting insights from our two top guests. In our Tehran studio, I'm delighted to be joined by a professional journalist. Mr. Salim Sualeh, it's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's always an honor being on board on Center Stage.
Great. Thanks very much indeed. And now, let me just tell you that Mr. Salim Sualeh is an established political analyst, well-versed in the issues taking Center Stage in North Africa. Now, Salim is also a respected colleague of mine at RIB Swahili Radio. Now, over the phone, I'm delighted to be joined by an established and professional political analyst and researcher, Dr. Hadi Azari. Welcome to Central Stage.
Hello, and glad to be here with you, Mr. Bijani.
Thanks very much. Now, Dr. Hadi Azari is an established researcher at U.S. Strategic Studies Center, well-versed in issues pertaining to the U.S. policy in the Middle East. Time for a short break.
The unrest in Syria has left a large part of its population in need of urgent humanitarian assistance. According to the UN's Undersecretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator, Valerie Amos, a shocking 6.8 million people out of a 20.8 million population need humanitarian assistance in Syria. Much more shocking, however, is the fact that a considerable part of such figure should be innocent children. The United Nations announced on April 18th that over 3 million children in Syria suffer from harsh and direful consequences of the crisis that has gripped the country for over two long years. Special Representative of the Secretary General for Children and Armed Conflict, Leyla Zarrougi, told the UN Security Council on Wednesday last week, "This emergency is a children's crisis. Attacks on hospitals and schools risk children's lives and jeopardize their access to education and medical assistance." Though the extent of the violations against children could never be determined, she said thousands of children had been killed and thousands more had been injured in the fighting. They had been killed in their homes, in their schools, and some had died trying to reach hospitals or while hiding in shelters. Children were in need of urgent medical care, yet often were unable to access it. More than half of Syria's health facilities had been damaged or could not be safely accessed. About 40% of hospitals were inoperative. Further, Palestinian and other refugee children had been killed or forced to flee their homes, she said, adding that only 35% of Palestinian children could access schools. On her visit to Damascus last December, she had met many Palestinian children living in dire circumstances in Yarmouk camp, where security was precarious, and she could not help but think about the fear they and their families faced daily. Zarrougi further called on the UN to work out an effective solution to end impunity for perpetrators of grave violence. Additionally, the violence with no end in sight.
Hello again, great to have you back with us. Now we're talking about Syria and we're talking about the situation, the plight of Syrian children. Now Leyla Zarrougi, UN Special Representative for Children and Armed Conflict, said on April 18th that there were now more than 3 million children affected inside the country. Now almost 2 million were internally displaced. Now she told the council that its urgent action on behalf of those children cannot wait another day. Now, Salim, it seems that there is a children's crisis in Syria.
That is pretty much correct, but I'd like to say that the situation in Syria is devastating, the situation in Syria is pathetic, and in all manner of definition, the situation in Syria is unacceptable. But having said that, let me remind you that whatever the children in Syria are going through is nothing out of the ordinary as far as children and conflict is concerned. Yeah. According to a report by a think tank, it shows us that in the last decade or so, the last 10 years or so, about 10 million children have been estimated to have been killed in conflicts around the globe.
Shocking figure, isn't
it? So what we are saying is that whatever we are seeing in Syria right now is a continuation of the hardships children have to undergo when a country is under conflict.
Great. Thanks very much indeed. Now, let's go to our other guest, Dr. Azari. It basically seems that apparently it's children and other civilians who are bearing the brunt of the violence in Syria.
Yeah, as you may know that the children are the most vulnerable, actually, people in the society. But now, right now in Syria, we have a grim picture of how children have been targeted in this civil war. Children living in poor, unhealthy conditions, but not only being physically harmed. I mean, these children not being physically harmed, they emotionally hurt and shattered. They are affected by the traumas of the war, of the seeing how people die. And on the other hand, we see that the matter of education, few youngsters, few children nowadays can go to school. The schools are under fire, and the teachers have fled the country. And in a report by UNICEF, said that in the city of Aleppo, only 6% of children went to school since last July. And it's disappointing, you see that. And the matter of the children and youngsters being abused by the militias, you know.
Right.
The militias use children and youngsters as porters, as human shields. And we should not forget about the girls and the women, you know, that this this phenomena of forced marriages. Nowadays, parents in Syria actually have to marry their girls, their daughters at very early ages to be protected from the threat of sexual violence and to have the chance to survive. So this might lead girls and women to prostitution.
Right.
And another factor that which plays a very important role right now is the hunger and malnutrition. You know, the rising price of food supplies, fuel and cooking oil. So this situation makes children sick and makes everybody sick,
right.
You know.
Great. Thanks very much. And it's very sad to know about that. Right.
Maybe to add something on what our other guest is saying. The most disappointing thing is that whatever is happening in Syria, as far as children are concerned, is happening in the 21st century. I mean, and it is happening with full support of those countries that are well known, or rather the self-proclaimed champions of democracy, champions of human rights. So the perseverance that the Syrian children are going through, they are going through those perseverance despite the fact that the Vienna Declaration and program of act, the program of action, I beg your pardon, the program is entitled to protecting the rights of children.
Right.
And again, the United Nations Convention, the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, the Article 19 of the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child says that state parties should do whatever they can to make sure they take appropriate measures legislatively, administratively, educationally, and socially to protect the rights of the children. So we are wondering, I mean, what is happening in Syria? I mean, where are those people who are supposed to fight for the rights of the children? They are the first people who are actually funding the groups that are really manipulating the children in Syria. We know that children in Syria are used as soldiers. Some of them are physically abused. So this is really devastating.
And also, as unfortunately, human shield as well. So that's really very sad. Now, we know that the UN Arab League Joint Special Envoy, Lakhdar Brahimi, is reportedly trying to distance himself from the Arab League which recently seated representatives of the armed opposition in Syria's Arab League seat. Now, according to one report which cites unnamed UN diplomats, Brahimi would now prefer to only represent the UN. We know that his mandate lasts until the end of the year, but Dr. Azari, many believe he won't stay that long.
Well, Brahimi appointed last year after Kofi Annan resigned hopelessly. Actually, he expressed his frustration. I mean, right. Brahimi has expressed in different times his frustration at the lack of progress towards a political solution to end this civil war in Syria. But he expressively criticized Arab League for endorsing an opposition interim government, you know, that Ghassan Hito elected as the interim prime minister, that a move that Brahimi described as a move that killed off and undermined any prospect of dialogue. He has also expressed his thoughts and resignation with the both sides not willing to cooperate. You know, the situation in Syria is getting a little bit more complicated, and I think not Brahimi, now anybody else could do much in there.
Great, thank you very much indeed for that. Now, what is your comment on that, Salim?
To add on the Lakhdar Brahimi's position, you know, the Lakhdar Brahimi's position is of a person who is employed by two employers. Brahimi, in a nutshell, is employed by the United right. Nations and the Arab League to mediate between the opposition in Syria and the government. But when you have a situation whereby one employer is deliberately frustrating your efforts to achieve your goal, you definitely will have some sort of thinking, or you probably would want to quit. And that is the position that Lakhdar Brahimi is in. I can remember some few days ago, I think some few weeks ago, the foreign minister, Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, said that during the meeting with Lakhdar Brahimi, Brahimi stated categorically that he would prefer, you know, dealing with the United Nations as opposed to the Arab League. Why? Because Arab League, on one hand, gave him a job. You go to Syria, bring the opposition and the government to the negotiating table, let them negotiate, let the violence in Syria come to a halt. But on the other hand, the same Arab League is taking relentless measures to arm the opposition, to arm them with weapon, with money, with food, and whatever assistance you may call it, if you may. So this is why Lakhdar Brahimi is feeling frustrated. The efforts he's trying to you know, the goals he wants to accomplish are being undermined by the same employer that sent him to Syria.
You know, the journalist put that question to him a number of times, and that question was, are you going to resign? And then Lakhdar Brahimi said, one day if I resign, I'll let you know. So he didn't specifically mention whether and when he'll resign.
And sources are telling us that Lakhdar Brahimi has always wanted to resign because of the frustrations he's getting from the West and from some of the Arab League members. But sources close to, or rather privy to the Lakhdar Brahimi, says that he has been very much pushed by the Western countries to stay in office, if you may, so that they would manipulate then his work and try to show the world that, you see, we've been giving two mediators, that was Kofi Annan and now Lakhdar Brahimi, and nothing has come up rather has come out of their efforts.
And we know that basically Kofi Annan was a very well-known diplomat, very successful, but when it came to Syria, he also couldn't
Kofi Annan
make
has
it.
A track record of bringing people together. I am from Africa, and I will tell you that
he's Kofi from Annan, Ghana, isn't he?
Yeah, he is from Ghana, and the most successful the most successful mission he was given by United Nations, and he accomplished it very well, is the conflict that that came after the general elections in Kenya 2007. He managed to bring both the opposition and the government at that time into the negotiating table. Right. They agreed to share power. And we know that Kofi Annan has a track record of successfully bringing people together. So when you see such a person, you know, just throwing in the towel, you have a question mark there.
Great. Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about the merger between Al-Qaeda branch in Iraq and the Syrian rebels. So please do stay with us. Hello again, it's great to have you back with us. Now, we know that on April the 9th, Al-Qaeda's branch in Iraq said it had merged with Syria's extremist Jabhat al-Nusra. This, according to some analysts, demonstrates the rising confidence of radicals within the Syrian opposition, doesn't it, Dr. Azari?
Before addressing the question you mentioned, I would like to add a word to the previous question. We should have in mind that Ebrahimi was elected, was employed by the UN to mediate between two sides. On one side, we have the Assad regime with a central leadership. But on the other side, the opposition is not as united as it should be. I mean, it should be united around the established leadership and credible constitutive program. But the opposition right now lacks it. And this is what makes the efforts of Brahimi make it failed. So, but concerning the question you made, analysts have been for months have been actually warning the U.S. and the Western powers about the Jabhat al-Nusra ties with al-Qaeda, and it's not something that it's not something new. Not everybody, but most experts would know it. But it's. I think this would not make a very significant change in the stance of U.S. or Western powers. They already knew it. But maybe it affects the way people look towards Jabhat al-Nusra. You know, Syria is a country of moderate Islam. So these people cannot tolerate this extremist or, let's say, Islamist extremism.
Great. Thanks very much. Salim, al-Nusra has been a big problem, I think, even for the supporters of the rebels, hasn't it? Because everybody's talking about them. And now finally, we saw that, I think it was quite unexpected, wasn't it, when to formally announce the merger with Al-Qaeda branch in Iraq, and they've chosen a new name for themselves as well.
Yeah, that is very correct. And I think, let's first look at who is, or rather, what is this Jabhat al-Nusra? This is the most notorious terrorist group operating in Syria right now. And having said that, let's not forget that United States of America designated the Jabhat al-Nusra as a terrorist group last year in 2012, December last year.
Right.
That shows you the gravity of the terrorism. The Jabhat al-Nusra has been claiming responsibility on a number of attacks in Damascus and other parts of Syria, like the very recent event is that they claimed the responsibility of two bombings in Damascus where about 49 people were killed. So we are talking of a very notorious terrorist group here. And the fact that they are now coming together with Al-Qaeda group in Iraq, I mean, this is devastating. I mean, I don't know where we are heading as far as the Syria conflict is concerned. But what is most disappointing right now is that those who are funding the terrorist groups in Syria, most of them, some of the Arab countries, some of them are the Western countries, are not saying anything. I remember listening to Secretary of State of the United States, John Kerry, when he was asked by journalists, are you still going to fund Syrian opposition groups or other Syrian radicals now that Jabhat al-Nusra has declared his allegiance to the Al-Qaeda leader, Ayman al-Zawahir? He said, well, we will try to maintain some contacts and we will make sure that we are supporting the right people. But Kerry said that we are not sure that the money and whatever assistance will be given to Syrian opposition, we are not sure that it will not fall into the hands of Jabhat al-Nusra and its al-Qaeda affiliates. So what does that mean? It simply means that now the countries that are in the forefront fighting terrorism, they are now beginning slowly by slowly to acknowledge the terrorist group and bring them to closer. They are hell-bent on their interest. And no matter what comes ahead of their interest, it just doesn't mean anything.
But you know, Kerry is saying that the help that we're providing to the rebels is not lethal.
What do you mean by non-lethal? I mean, when Kerry says that the efforts, or rather the help they're providing to the Syrian opposition is non-lethal, and this same group are responsible for killing young children, for killing women, for killing, I mean, innocent civilian, this is very lethal to the Syrian people. It should be understood in that perspective.
Great. Thanks very much indeed for that. Now, we know that the press conference held at the end of the so-called Friends of Syria conference in Istanbul, as Salim just said, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said that the U.S. would double its non-lethal military aid to Syria's rebels, and the sum is the amount of $123 million defense aid package. And that was announced by Kerry at the meeting in the Turkish capital on Sunday. Now, the Secretary of State said the new non-lethal military supplies would go beyond the current provisions of food and medical kits. So, Dr. Azari, what do you think he means by that?
Well, it's not the first time that U.S. and its partners supporting a terrorist group. Let's journey back through time and to the 1980s in Afghanistan. U.S. trained and armed Mujahideen during their battle against Soviet invaders. And U.S. indirectly and directly supported Taliban. In that time, they wanted Afghanistan under stable control of one government to ensure a $4.5 billion oil and gas pipeline. So, as we see, it's not the first time in American's history that an administration funding a terrorist group. And it's really clear they are trying to arm the rebels, arm even the Jabhat al-Nusra or the extremists in Syria. And as you know, that the Jabhat al-Nusra is one of the most powerful and best supplied militant groups, with much of its support believed to come from the Gulf countries and U.S. and Western powers. So it's really clear they are going to intervene more directly in Syria, even military intervention.
Great. Thanks very much. Now, let's talk a little bit about the Syrian president's interview with Syria's Al-Ikhbariya television station last week. And he said, quote, the West has paid heavily for funding Al-Qaeda in its early stages. Today, it's doing the same in Syria, Libya and other places, and will pay a heavy price in the heart of Europe and the United States. What do you think, Salim, he means by that, paying heavy price at the heart of Europe and the United States?
President Bashar al-Assad is trying to take us back to what happened during the Soviet Union. During that time, the U.S. and its allies propped up al-Qaeda from nothing to a very huge, you know, a very huge thing. I mean, we know very well that at that time, the U.S. gave relentless support to the Osama bin Laden and his group in order for him to probably disintegrate the Soviet Union. And what came out of that many years later, and if September 11 incident is anything to go by, that is what Bashar al-Assad is talking about. The same person, or rather the same group that the U.S. Propped up many years back, they came to hound them back, and they did something that the U.S. will never forget if that incident is anything to go by.
Did Bashar al-Assad mention anything to show that he's really willing to listen to those groups, those segments of the people who have rightful demands? Because we know that some Syrians are, I mean, not everybody who is against him belongs to the al-Nusra or the other terrorist groups.
Well,
and we have some people who have rightful demands. So did he mention anything which shows that he's ready to listen to them as well and do something to...
Well, President Bashar al-Assad, I don't want to be seen as probably a Syrian government spokesman,
right.
But let's be very honest and let's call a spade. President Bashar al-Assad has, in numerous times and in numerous occasions, called for ceasefire and negotiation. We remember at the beginning of this conflict, 2 years 2 years back, when mm-hmm. when people went to the street and said, you know, we want these changes. A lot of changes came in handy, political mm-hmm. changes, social changes, and President Bashar al-Assad kept on saying, you come to the negotiating table. I know you have very meaningful demands. I know your demands are legitimate, and I'm ready to listen to those demands. But what happened is that the so-called Syrian Free Army, or rather the opposition, if you may, just...
Are you saying it's too late now for dialogue?
It's not too late. It's not too late for the dialogue. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there are those people who are not willing to see the mm-hmm. Syrian conflict ending in a diplomatic manner. They just, they're hell-bent on regime change, and that is what they want to achieve at the end of the day.
Thank you very much indeed for those comments. Let's take a short break. After the break, we'll be talking about a new segment of Central Stage. So please do stay with us. Hello again and welcome back. Now, today we're going to start a new segment. We've actually added a new segment to Central Stage called Central Stage Online Search, a segment of the show where we go on the internet for you to see what's taken Central Stage online. So the first website we're going to talk about today is actually the UN website, and it's about one of its meetings. It's actually the 6,949th meeting of the Security Council, so many meetings so far. Yeah. And it basically talks about the humanitarian catastrophe in Syria, and describing the situation in Syria as a humanitarian catastrophe, with ordinary people paying the price for the failure to end the conflict. And Salim, here is an interesting point. A senior United Nations official said that even amid that grim reality and the possibility looming that humanitarian programs critical to ease the suffering might have to be shut down, the Security Council had been unable to reach the consensus needed to support a political resolution to the crisis.
Yeah, that's most unfortunate part of it, because we know what the Security Council is. We know what it is. I mean, we know the members, and the same members in the Security Council, mm-hmm. The permanent members, are the same members that are, you know, that are putting fuel into the conflict in Syria. Mm-hmm. So what do you expect? I mean, you expect the same people to try, because they're hell-bent on regime change, and that is what they want. So it's very difficult to see the same person who wants to achieve a certain goal, diverting from that and going to another.
And Senator, there's another point. Under Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Emergency Relief Coordinator Valerie Amos told the Council, and I'm just quoting, "We are approaching a point of no return." Do you think they really are approaching a point of no return?
In Syria, I would say yes to some extent and no to some extent. What am I saying yes is that the goals and aspirations of the Syrian people is to have a country that is back in one piece and not in pieces. And that makes the possibility of this conflict to be resolved. But again, the people, the forces behind splitting Syria are not sleeping. I mean, they're sleepless and they're relentless in achieving their goals. So it's 50-50.
Great, thanks very much. Now, the second website that we picked up for you is the RT website on the 20th of April 2013. And it's about the US giving $123 million military aid package to Syrian rebels. And it says that actually you can hopefully, I'm not sure whether you can see the pictures. Yes, you can see the pictures. And then you see US Secretary of State John Kerry in the center, Egypt's Foreign Minister Mohammed Kamal Am on the left. And of course, you can see Turkey's Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu, second left. They've attended the Friends of Syria meeting on April 20th in Istanbul. And then Kerry made that announcement. Dr. Azeri, I mean, this amount, $123 million, I mean, to be honest, it can't change things for the rebels, can it? I mean, it's not a huge sum of money, is it?
I think it's a little bit the political stance that the United States, despite all its political and economical catastrophes within its own country, still... Mm.
Right.
Support.
Great.
The rebels.
Great. So I think it's probably, you know, to be honest, do you think it is of a more symbolic value than probably something that can really make a difference?
No. According to the figures, the money is not that much. I mean, but it is symbolic in this case that, or rather in this manner that the Americans or the U.S. will go to, you know, to any limit to ensure it achieves its goal. And as I said, we know the goal of the US and its allies is to have a regime change in Syria.
Great. And let's go to Press TV's website. This is the third website we picked out for you this week. It's basically about the merger of Al-Qaeda and, of course, the Al-Qaeda's branch in Iraq and the Syrian militants. They've basically... announced a merger, as you can see in the picture behind me. So Al-Qaeda inspired Islamic, they now have a new name. It's called the Al-Qaeda inspired Islamic State of Iraq Network. I think this merger really, first this merger and then the aid following this merger, about 1 week after the merger was announced. What do you think about, what's the importance of timing in you know, U.S. help to the militants, do you think?
I mean, it only sends out one message that no matter what happens in Syria, no matter who comes in, no matter who does what, we are not going to change our policies in Syria. We are not going to change our course in Syria. I mean, that is as far as the West and its allies are concerned. And this is a test, or rather is proven by the interview I saw, I think, a week ago on BBC by when Benjamin Netanyahu was interviewed, and he was asked, after this merger, do you think the Israeli regime will change its course as far as arming Syrian rebels is concerned? He said, no, we are actually considering putting more efforts on the Syrian opposition side. So that's the message that it sends.
Right. Great. Thank you very much indeed for your valuable comments on the websites we picked out for our viewers. Now, let's talk. We just have about 3 minutes left to the end of the show, and we'd like to talk about the senior Iranian MP, Alaeddin Burujerdi, who actually went to Syria and he met a number of Syrian officials, including, of course, Bashar Assad. So, Dr. Azeri, very briefly, what do you think is this parliamentary trip aimed at this particular point in time?
Yeah, well, Burujerdi actually heading the high-ranking delegation is embarked a three-day visit to Syria and is scheduled to visit Walid al-Muallim and the Bashar Assad. Well, I think it's a trip to express Iran's support for Assad and his proposal for comprehensive national dialogue. It shows amid this crisis, amid the Western powers showing their support symbolically and practically, Iran is trying to still back the regime. And
so it seems that the two sides are really adamant on what they're doing, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And one more point about the Assad interview with Al-Akhbariya. In his interview, just had very explicit and clear message to the world. In his interview, he says, the fall of my regime would lead to a domino effect that would destabilize the region for many years. So Iranian, as one of the neighboring countries, is still concerned about the consequences. So I think, and this time, Iran can actually act as a mediator between two sides.
Great. Thanks very much indeed for that. Now, your prognosis, Salim, of the future of Syria in just 1 minute.
Unfortunately, I don't have a very positive prognosis of future in Syria because we know the people behind the division in Syria are very powerful nations, so to speak. So we are into a show, a big show in Syria. I mean, civil conflict that probably, as President Bashar Assad said, it will engulf not just within the borders of Syria, but it will go beyond the borders of Syria. And when it reaches that, then it's going to be more catastrophic vis-a-vis what we are seeing now. So the West are still having time to prevent that from happening.
Great. Thank you very much. Indeed, and unfortunately, I think it's it's normal people, particularly children, who are bearing the brunt of the violence in Syria. Thanks very much indeed. So unfortunately, that's all the time we've got for the moment. But before I go, I'd like to thank again my top guests. We had Dr. Hadi Azari, established researcher at US Strategic Studies Center, over the phone. And we had Mr. Salim Saleh, established political analyst and top journalist in the studio. Thanks to you both for coming over, for talking to us, and of course, for those valuable insights. We very much hope that the situation in Syria, particularly when it comes to children, will ease and will basically turn for the better. Now, with that wish and with that sort of understanding that hopefully children will not suffer as much, I'd like to say goodbye and thank you very much indeed. And of course, thank again our guest today, on behalf of myself and the rest of the team. So thanks very much indeed for watching, and please do stay in touch with Central Stage. Next week we'll be talking about another issue which has taken Central Stage in the world. So please try to have a very good week ahead. Thank you very much. Thanks again. Thank you. It was great to have you.